Mike the call over now?
Yeah, it just ended.
Okay. Well, what is your take, Steve?
You know, I didn't listen to the call. I just recorded it. I had family obligations tonight, and I took care of family obligations, and this is listening for another day.
Okay, what are you working on right now?
What am I working on?
Yeah.
What I'm working on is getting a whole bunch of stuff done that I had to do at home that I've been putting off for years, and I haven't done it, and I'm just doing doing things with my my family and getting a bunch of stuff done so that when I get all these monkeys off my back, I can have a brain. And in between times, I'm working. You know, I'm keeping my options open, talking to people. I've got a daughter that's just getting ready to jump in and start. I thought she was going to do it last May, and she decided she was going to do something else for a short period of time, and now she's getting ready to jump in here shortly. And so she asked me last night what I wanted her to be learning, and I told her. So, but that's what I'm doing.
Well, you're seeing people scramble across the board trying to find a place to put their feet down.
Yep.
One of the reasons that this has become a slippery operation in trying to deal with Mike's group is that there's two things that are of critical importance right now. And one of the reasons why I have not organized my group in real serious fashion for pushing this out. Number one, I want to get back to the group accountability and the group interactiveness that Pathfinders provide for us.
Great.
This is nothing more than a skeleton through which those kinds of concepts can work. My team works best under those issues. But this is impossible to download. And if you can't get past the first step, you can't get to the second step.
Right.
And one of the things that I need to finalize is to get instructions for people who are in various forms of XP and Vista and so forth. How can they download this? Now, the second thing is, which pieces are useful and when are they useful? To just give somebody this as a big wad of a tool is like taking somebody who's never seen a library before and setting them in the Library of Congress and say, go at it.
Right.
The points are very, very, very valid. And I think that we're so close to understanding the bigger picture of how society changed. And the interesting part is society is changing toward us, toward the things that we leverage and think about and do, part of what Mike was talking about. And we have to understand what has just happened. Are people in your environment around you concerned about the change in the world today?
Sure. And especially in my environment where we were looking at a possibility of a strike last Friday night. You know,
and what kind of company are you with?
Telecommunications with Quest, telephone company. It's never happened in the 50-year history of the unions and the company to have them hammer out an agreement and have the rank and file turn it down. Never happened in the history of the company. And if you don't think that didn't shake a lot of people's boots, both in the union members and also in the company.
But you can see how there are so many people that are trying tenaciously to hold on to the old, and they are trying to play with rules that were dead in 1989.
Right.
And those people who believe that's the way the world ought to stay are really fighting against the way the world is actually moved.
Right.
And it isn't like it's moving that way, it's already moved. And
thus, the
whole deal with the major corporations are falling apart as we speak because they can't operate fast enough, they can't change quickly enough within the current environment to keep up with the change. So you'll get bodies of people that want it to stay the same way it always has, but it can't. So it's going to be real interesting to watch. So what was the result?
They came up with another tentative agreement. So we'll see if the union ratifies it.
And which side did you fall on?
Well, I thought it was really stupid the way they structured it, you know, before. they give us a raise, but then take the raise away in higher medical costs, which makes us, the employees, pay 20% of our increase to the government, or 30% of the increase to the government, and so we go in the hole. And I'm sorry, that's a little stupid to me. And very arrogant.
Yeah, and then you,
and very, to me, very arrogant of the union to say, hey, yeah, we brought you back a raise. No, you didn't. You cut our wages 20% on what you gained for us and made us go in the hole. I mean, that's, you know, so anyway, I was very adamant about that.
And it's, I'll be interested to see how it turns out for everybody. But I think that, I don't know if you got to hear Mike there at the end, but he was talking about leverage.
Right.
And isn't the struggle predominantly for most people to move from the left side of Kiyosaki's quadrants to the right side?
You know, and that, what I find, you know, working in an environment like I've been, you know, working for the last 9 years, and I realize we're paid very well for what we do. You know, I don't think that, you know, some of the abuse that I take being on the telephones is that we get paid enough, you know, take the abuse that we take. But, you know, in comparison to what other people around the world get paid, we get paid really, really well. And to try to take someone that's what's well paid, but still used to going to a job and sitting there in the stanchion, you know, with your head, you know, through the stanchion, and you're sitting there eating the grass, it's hard to get them to have any other dream except do that, even though they hate doing it every day. And drives me crazy.
Well, it's just a very, very interesting time because, for example, did you ever hear why General Motors predominantly was going to have some trouble in the long run?
Because of...
Here's an example.
Yeah, healthcare costs.
And costs of employees.
Right.
Because at Toyota, who, I don't know if anybody really disputes the fact that Toyota is eating their lunch.
Yep.
And they're just kind of cleaning up on GM. Through past agreements, it's worked out that Toyota now, if you buy a Toyota in America, it more money stays in America than if you buy a General Motors product. But interestingly, for the same job at Toyota that pays $29 an hour, the same job at General Motors pays $89 an hour, which will make it very, very difficult to be competitive in the marketplace. And then add on top of that the currently structured healthcare system. And I look at things as, I'm kind of a Pollyanna, because if there's a way for each one of us to wake up every day and make the world a better place than it was the day before, I really think that you kind of look at the current situation, is it raining today? Well, let's make the world a better place by creating umbrellas.
Yep.
If you wake up and you are really making umbrellas, but it doesn't seem to be raining for 4 months, and you complain because it's not raining so your umbrellas won't sell, I'd say, you know, create a new use for umbrellas or come up with a new product. And what's coming up with new products in the future is going to be forcing people to learn more self-worth. It's going to be forcing people to be better employees. It's going to be forcing people to be better human beings, and probably going to force us to have greater interaction with each other. And so it's going to be pretty exciting to watch, but it's going to be a very, very, very significant and violent change in the minds of those who've grown up with the idea that all they have to do, and you've seen this, the government structure is going to be the one that's really going to shake people up, because when you have people who, for all intents and purposes, they pass their interview, and then for the rest of their life, they're just hooked up by umbilical cord to a welfare system, because you can't get rid of them, and they sort of do just enough to keep from getting fired, but you can't fire them anymore. And that makes a pretty low-quality existence for the people who are working, because there's a huge population of people who are working out there who are afraid to lose their job because they don't know what to find that will replace it with that kind of income. They really aren't doing anything. You ever been hanging around the hallowed halls of government lately? There's a bunch of people that aren't doing a thing. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to people having to go out and say, okay, what can I bring, as opposed to what can you give me? I think it's going to create a tremendous amount of new innovation, new beliefs in people's own skills and abilities. Looks all good to me. We've had, just to give you kind of a fill-in, do you remember Andre and Marina?
Uh-huh. You bet.
Well, their dad got the performance bonus, a $9,000 check last month. Andre and Marina are going to be five. They broke their seventh silver in their organization today. It's kind of weird, broke in the middle of the month. And they're now in firmly planted. They have at least six people in 12 cities around the country. They're just going nuts.
That's
but it's a different way.
Right.
It's a group of people who are stuck together because of the fact that they're so grateful to be able to talk to somebody who speaks their language every day. And so that's exciting to see. Our check in our group overall, as disjointed as I've been in trying to kind of get a figure for where are we and how are we going to organize this thing, has doubled in the last 2 months.
Fantastic.
So I don't know if that gives you any hope of the future, but it looks like things are really pulling out of the station. I was talking with one of our people from Minneapolis, brand new. They got, I think, 18 people in their group now in 2 months. And they met up, I guess, at a Dave Stolfus event with a few other people who are kind of coming out of the woodwork. And I talked with the new Platinum out of Colorado, who used to have 175 people there. Said mostly it kind of went away without Karen, and they had 75, but now it's starting to grow. And I just identified in one day three teams that were either non-existent 3 months ago or not growing 3 months ago are actually adding 5 to 10 to 15 new people in a place and didn't even know each other existed. So now I think there's 35 new people in the Minneapolis market that started this last month. It's pretty fun to start seeing this kind of groundswell movement.
Right.
So I don't hear that anybody else is on the call, but I just want to give you sort of a sense that things are really starting to pop and to penetrate.
Yeah, I think everybody probably has. Yeah, I'm excited to hear that. I apologize for cutting you off. I couldn't get on the call until Mike hung up. For some reason, the codes were, whether they had all the lines taken up or whatever, I couldn't get on until I tried a half a dozen times. And I couldn't get on until after they quit the call.
Well, I think it's it's worth going back and reviewing, and I think what you're doing is you're standing back and watching the think tank.
Yeah, well, you know, and
I think people really have to become aware of that.
Yeah, and one of the things that I've learned, you know, in the last few weeks, last month, couple months, whatever, is I've got to learn to prospect. I know everything else, I just don't know the first thing you should learn, and that's prospect. And I've just come to the conclusion that somehow, whether I do it over the telephone or whether I do it in person, it's probably going to have to be over the telephone. I've got to learn to prospect. And, my daughter calls me last night, and says, "Hey, Dad, what do you want me to do?" And I, "What do you want me to learn?" And the first thing I say, think to myself, "Well, I want you to learn all the about people's experiences, on the Saturday AM live calls." And I got thinking overnight, and I said, no, I want you to learn how to prospect. And so I sent her to the discovernican.biz, and I said, go to the e-tools, go to the e-vites, download it, and learn it. Send it to yourself and learn it. You don't need to know anything.
Good.
We've got Upline that we can get people on the telephone to teach people. You learn to prospect and talk to people.
I think that's an absolutely critical point, Steve. And what you've been doing is you've been watching the inner workings of some of us who are trying to figure out how to run groups of 1,000 people.
Right.
And now I'm trying to re-up and begin to orient myself and team leaders to running groups of 100,000 people.
Right.
But that's absolutely impertinent to you unless you have people.
Right. But, the thing that I want to know how to do, and this is something I've always been searching for, and, I sent you that one sheet. I did a carbon copy that I sent to Janice of that sheet that actually the Weinsteins used. And that simple sheet is something I would really love to have somebody. I think we need to put something like that together that's on one piece of paper that isn't in the middle of a great big humongous document, just one sheet like that we can send people to and says, when they're ready to go, this is what we want you to do. We'll modify it as time goes on and as we learn the best, but this is what is the best right now, the simplest, the easiest, and least expensive way for you to build your business. Follow the sheet. And I would think that would be helpful for yourself. It would be helpful for me. It would, you know, be great for me. Great for my son, Greg.
You're right at the crux of it. That's a very, very poignant statement. Is there anyone else on the call?
Ferguson just came in.
Cool. Hi, guys.
Hi, sorry we're late. We were gone.
Oh, was it worthwhile?
I guess. Kind of, yeah.
Well, I'm on with Steve, and Steve's the only one that's on with us on this call. I just got off the call with Mike and Terry and their call. So I just canceled out my WebEx section, but I'm talking with Steve, and Steve brings up a point that you've often brought up, and I think others have as well. And it's a point that I may be really missing the boat on. And Steve says he's been at it for quite a while and doesn't have a huge team. And says, if I want to change that, there's one thing that I need to do, and that's learn to prospect. So of all the people we have, what about, how do we do that? What is it, where do you go? Is there a way to learn to prospect? Is it that some of us who prospect easily, is there something we take for granted that we should be teaching?
I know we prospect easily, but we can't do the follow-through, so we're opposite.
Okay, so if you described what you did to prospect easily, I'd like to have I would like to have Steve kind of, once you say that, Steve, pick out things in there that you think either make sense, work, are, aren't, whatever, that you might be missing. So would you share us with that, Michelle? What is your sense of prospecting and why does it work? And then we may talk about what's the follow-up and why is that difficult. But for now, what is prospecting and why does it work for you?
Talk to people. We get people involved in our conversation, no matter what it is or where it is. You know.
And how do you get their interest so that they want to hear your conversation?
Depends on what the conversation is at the time. Like when I was in the cash register line with the lady, and the lady in front of me was arguing with the cash register lady at Fred Meyer's of how can she get her grocery expense down? She can't afford to pay for her groceries. Can't she give me a discount? So after that lady, you know, the cashier said, I'm in the same issue, I'm divorced and I have a child and I have not enough money and I work 12 hours a day, 7 days a week and still not have enough money. So then at that point, when I came in up next, I asked her for her name and phone number and asked her if she wanted to make more money, if she wanted more time to herself. Just, you know, just falling into the conversation of whatever people are in.
And Steve, why would somebody not engage in a conversation like that? Can you see that there are many more people who won't engage in such a conversation and as opposed to those who will?
Say that over again.
If you were to take the general population,
okay,
and ask them if they would feel comfortable in responding as Michelle did to the cashier today, would you say there are more people who wouldn't say anything, even if they were NECAN distributors, or are there more people who would say something?
The people that you're talking to?
If you had a secret agent distributor in line at a supermarket,
right,
and you put 10 people in line,
okay,
what percentage of those people would hear a conversation that says, I don't have enough money either, and would go through the line and say nothing? What percent?
Oh, I would probably say 75%.
And so here's the big question. Why would somebody like Michelle say that and other people not?
Because
they're not listening.
Well, yeah, they're not listening or they don't have any hope. They're stuck in the rut.
So that the person who is the NECAN distributor in line feels like they don't have any hope. So why bring up hope with the cashier is what you're saying?
Okay, I think I misunderstood what you're going after. I think there are a lot of people. Whoop, where'd that come from? I think there are a lot of people that have, you know, that don't have a lot of hope, and I think my wife was one of them, but yet I think there are other people that do.
I can't hear him at all, Jerry. Can you have him mute maybe Star 4?
Star 6. Star 4, that's what it would be. See if we can bring up the game.
All of a sudden, my line's gone crazy.
So now you're actually loud. Can you hear it?
I'm sorry. This feature is not enabled.
Doesn't like Star 4. How's that? Is that better?
Oh, you're very much louder. You must have just
better.
Come off of
it.
It
is much better. Thank you.
Okay, I just probably had the mic in the wrong place. But, you know, I don't know. I think there are some days that, I know myself, there are some days that I just don't want to talk to anybody, so I don't talk to anybody. There are other days that you can't shut me up. So,
Michelle, let me ask you this. How much do you believe that the model of NECAN is a better model than other people, or than the general working person has for generating good income in their life?
100%.
It's not a question?
Not a question. Anybody can do it if they put the time in to do it.
Are there days when you have trouble believing that concept, or do you always believe it's just intrinsic to your belief system that people, that what NECAN represents is a better chance for people to get out of that than the current job they're working? Do you always believe that? Or
I always believe that. We're a business owner. I see it plain and simple. That's not unmanageable to me, no.
Do you think you would see the world differently if you were not a family that owned their own business? If your family was basically just an employee-based family?
Probably, yes.
Steve, do you agree with that, that a family that's got an employee-based mentality might see this offering in a different way generally than somebody who does have their own business?
I totally agree with that, because when I owned my own business for 4.5 years, and my family being able to eat was with what I was doing, you know, it was anything that I could do to survive.
Do you think that maybe this is part of the question as to why most distributors who sign up for this will not ever get the picture that let's go back to the basic premise. Network marketing is essentially transferring a vision from one person to the next. If the vision is so clear and so profound and so loud that what we currently have to offer is tremendously more valuable than what they're currently doing, does it make sense that it would be easy to bring it up to anybody at any time?
Sure.
For example, Michelle, out of the downline that you run right now, how many people do you think are afraid to bring this up with other people?
Probably 2/3. But we've been working on that too.
And so it's all perceived value, though, right? Because
when we started doing group training at Mike's house, people started opening up more and started being able to talk to people. But there's still the lack of follow-through, because they don't know what to say in the follow-through step.
And yet, we're
teaching the people how to talk to people. Now we have to go farther and teach them what to do after they've talked to the people.
Yeah, so it's kind of a perceived value. Let's explore that a little bit. If all of your people that were the 60% that really don't want to talk to somebody or feel real self-conscious about it, out of those people, if they saw that person drop a $50 bill out of their purse or their pocket, could tap the person on the shoulder and give them their $50 back, do you think all of them could do it?
Yes.
And they wouldn't have any reservations or feel badly about it, right?
Right.
So the point on this short little discussion is, what is it that they're missing in their belief about NECAN that caused them not to tap somebody on the shoulder and say, you dropped this. You may want this. What were you lacking between those two scenarios in somebody who doesn't bring up NECAN? I don't know if I'm phrasing the question correctly, but...
No, I understand what you're saying. I don't know.
It's in the belief and the value, right?
Some parts I think it's in the... and not knowing what to do also.
Well, you know,
so let's say... Go ahead, Steve.
Oh, no, keep going.
If we have the people that we don't know in the world and we offer to give them back their $50, what do you think they're going to get out of it?
pleasure knowing somebody's honest.
Steve, you got any more that they would get out of it?
Well,
somebody cares.
If somebody's honest, they didn't lose what they had lost.
Mm-hmm.
Which hopefully would be gratitude.
So, there's a universal understanding, pretty much. Everybody seems to think that the $50 has value to every single person, right? So for them to give the $50 back to somebody who lost it, there's no angst. How many times a day could you give somebody back their $50 if they dropped it out of your pocket, Steve, out of their pocket?
How many times has it happened?
If you saw 40 people drop $50 out of their pocket during a day, how many of those people could you give their $40 back to, or their $50 back to them?
All of them.
Yeah, all of them, right?
Yeah, uh-huh.
How many people, if you saw 40 a day, could you bring up Ken with, just comfortably, without stretching, with the same level of belief that that was going to be tremendous value to them as giving back their $50?
It should be every one of them.
Can you see?
Yeah. I mean,
that's what I see from that, Jerry, is when you give somebody back their $40, $50 or whatever it is, that there's no follow-through with that conversation, it's finished. So there's no hesitation not to follow through, because there's nothing to come afterwards.
Okay, that's an interesting point, because that's the point at which you get stuck. That's great. That's a great perspective.
Yeah.
And Steve, do you see that buried somewhere in between those two scenarios is the answer to what you're trying to ask?
Right. And you know what? It's a situation that I thought was very interesting. I don't know whether you were on Rick's call last night, but I think the first half of that call, he hit some things that were really close to home for me. And one of them, he talked about, and I've listened to it twice today, but he talked about people, and I've been in this boat, and so has my wife, you know, when they're complaining, you know, all these tools that we have available, everything that we have available, and they can't find anybody, and they say that out loud. Well, if they've said it out loud, that's admitting defeat. And that's not the word he used, but do you understand what I'm saying, Jerry? I mean,
you're creating your own reality.
That's right. And so what he said, you know, that he found when he was in the military, and he used his sergeant, and I know that you've heard this story before, where he was talking about 3:30 on Friday afternoon, the sergeant sends him to the motor pool to do something with the trucks, and each one of the trucks takes an hour to do, and he sent him to do all 4.5 hours. You know, he comes back to the barracks, and and Murphy, did you get it done? No. He starts carrying on. Murphy, extra duty for the weekend. Next week, same thing happens. Third week, he comes back and says, sir, I didn't get it done. And he goes, Murph, had a good weekend. Goodbye. Taught him to not argue. Make excuses. So, it was
fundamentally... It's fundamentally, there is the block that comes with you and with Michelle at the point of follow-up is there is something in your definitions that you play in your head every day that blocks that, right?
Right. Something's there, something's underneath. You know, whether it's been, you know, doing it for 11 years and not doing it right, so you quit doing it, and then retool like I've been doing for the last couple, 3 months, and, you know, and then get ready to go back at it again. And that's what he said. You have to get up and do it again. You got to figure out what you're doing wrong. You know, don't worry about the problem. Solve the problem. Figure out what's going on and make it better and get it done. So
Michelle, in terms of follow-up, what would you say are some of the things that go through your head when you think about follow-up?
It isn't about doing the follow-up, it's just about having the time to do the follow-up, but I'll say, you know, we don't have time to follow through with that, let's catch him next week, or, you know.
Okay, good.
If you see somebody get at Home Depot or something, instead of getting them and not being able to stay on top of them, you know, I'll say, well, let's come back next week and catch that person then and ask them for their phone number then instead of, you know, because we don't have time to do it this week.
So under the current method, it's not feasible. Just like going to the motor pool and you have to do an impossible job, it's just not feasible under the current method to get done what you need to get done. You can't process people because there's not enough time to live life and do that at the same time, right?
Right. It's like Russell. He has like 15 bags full of all these carts, and we have no time to do anything with them.
Okay, perfect. We've come to a tremendous spot here. I once was going through a Checkers line at the grocery store, and I got to thinking about how when I was a kid, you used to buy something, and somebody would hand fill out a receipt. And then that receipt would be put in a certain place in the cash register or something. And then it would be processed later by someone by hand. And so only so many transactions could happen in a given day. Can you see there's an upper limit?
Yes, of course. I see it every day. In both of our businesses, it's that way.
So what do they do today in a grocery store that has opened up the numbers of possible interactions?
Self-scan in computers.
And what happens when the computer takes the information in? Barcodes was huge, right?
Yep.
And encrypted on the barcode is a tremendous amount of information that if it took a person to hand enter all the information that's on the barcode, where it was shipped from, what day it was produced, what lot number it was, how much it cost, what are the tax, all that sort of stuff, would limit probably by 100 times the amount of dollars that can be taken into any given store on a given day. So the mechanisms were changed to be able to process much more quickly. So if you were going to process somebody into NECAN more quickly so we could get that done, that is the crux of a lot of that we're working on right now. But what would your perception be? How would you process somebody to the point where they could make a reasonable decision in a much quicker time frame?
I don't know right now because we've been doing the four-step process, but it's taking too long.
Okay.
Instead of us doing a half an hour, we're doing, most of the time it's an hour or hour and a half, and it's way too long because we know we may not get right back to them. So, you know, you're giving them too much information right off the bat.
What do they need to know?
Not much. Not as much as we're giving them.
Okay,
They know how to get to the meeting so they can learn more information from there. That's all they need to know.
And if the meeting was done in a real systematic way, almost like a barcode, so it's always looks the same, that would make more sense, right?
Yep.
How many different ways could a person perceive a meeting?
Many different ways, especially right now at ours.
And how many different ways could they attend a meeting?
Many different ways.
Do they have to be present at a location like Harris Office Equipment, or what other things could they do to actually get that information?
Well, like WebEx or Rick Murphy's thing or one of those or a CD.
So what if we took the process and we said, how much of this is too much information and what is exactly necessary? Do you think you could pare it down to what really needed to be done so that you could get effective and efficient at the same time, rather than trying, let me throw this out. Do you think we're trying to convince too many people?
I do, yes.
And yet if we were trying to find people who already understand or the timing is right for them to understand, we would cut out all the convincing stuff and just go with those who are ready and ripe?
The ones that are ready and ripe, I think we're trying to convince.
And that sets them up to believe they have to convince others, right?
Right.
And that slows the process down. So ultimately, I love what you're saying. And if you knew, like being the cashier, all you had to do was to scan and to take their card or do a check, and you know, those were consistent processes, you could see how you could do that much more quickly, right? So if the sales, tools that we were using were actually sales tools, so they did the sales, and you didn't have to, and all you did was just to process the order, lead them in and process the orders, that would be a much quicker response, right?
Yes.
Under the current stuff we're doing right now, can you see that being done, and what would you do?
I can kind of see it being done, starting to be done with WebEx. Do I think it's there fully? No.
I agree with that, too.
Once we get all the quirks worked out of it, I think it could be a very useful tool. But then again, I know there's a lot of people in our valley that are still on dial-up, and unless I have a place where I can bring them to where we can show them that, then it doesn't work.
One of the things that, sorry, didn't mean to talk over the top of you.
I can't hear him at all.
Okay, I was just apologizing for talking over the top of you. But,
I can't hear you.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay, anyway, what my son has been very aggressively doing is, and I realize he has a laptop, which some people don't have. I still don't have a laptop, but, well, actually I do, but it's a Pentium 90, which is worthless. But anyway, he's downloaded all the stuff, a lot of the stuff, and he literally can sit down. He listens to people, what they're talking about, what they say, he asks them if it's okay if he talks to them. And he'll literally pull out the laptop and show them a 2-minute or 5-minute or 10-minute video right then. Now, does that make sense to you? Good. Let's talk.
It does.
And it's been amazing what he's been able to do with that. But again, for whatever reason, we haven't been able to take it from the interest stage to the let's buy something stage or let's join stage. And it's driving him crazy and driving me crazy too, because I don't know what to tell him to do.
Okay.
Yeah. I think people have to see the value in it, not just as the value of the products. They have to see the value as a business owner like we do. At some point, they have to see that this could go towards their retirement. If they give it 12 hours a week or something, they could be building a retirement plan that they don't have. They have to see some other value.
Good point. Exactly. And then describing to them that value and how to make that value operate, wouldn't that be interesting? So,
are you on dial-up?
If you were...
What's that?
Are you on dial-up or are you on high-speed?
I'm on dial-up at home, yes.
Okay.
I have a laptop that we can go on wireless if it's in the area.
Okay.
So let's see. The value to them, that's exactly the point that we're missing here for both of your teams, and that is
value in the production of it, value in the business production, you know, all of that stuff.
The return on investment.
Yeah. Go ahead.
And so the value is in question because if you had 5 out of 10 times you started somebody, they could go off and you saw them earn a $5,000 check within 6 months, it would be a whole lot easier to describe what we do, right?
Of course.
And you would feel much more confident about sitting down with somebody and saying, no matter what you're doing, if you want to achieve this end and you'll do these things, there's a 50% chance you're going to make it.
I think that's half the problem of, you know, the people that haven't made that. You know, they don't feel confident in saying that because they have, you know, they haven't seen the true value.
Yep. So why did Dave Johnson, when he started and had $0, was he able to get that point across, but other people are not?
Belief.
And you see, most people are waiting to see it done before they believe, but Dave Johnson was very different. He believed, and so it became done.
Yes. How does one transition from one place to the other?
I have no clue. I'm trying to figure that one out.
Okay, now I think with Dave Johnson, it was a situation that he knew Charles Ritchie. And he knew if Charles Ritchie could do it, he could do it.
Mm-hmm. Do you know Dave Johnson?
Yes, I do.
Do you know Greg Rooney? Do you know Greg Rooney?
I do.
If he could do it, why can't you?
And that's a good question. I haven't put the answer to yet.
These are really the core issues. If it's doable by somebody else, it's doable by anybody that sees it. And then what the age-old question is, and the same thing that was always related is, it's the guy who's sitting in front of this wood stove and said, look, wood stove, if you give me some heat, I'll give you some wood. But by God, until you give me some heat, there's no wood forthcoming. And that's exactly where most people are. How do we get out of that? Well, you guys have seen and probably gone a little bit crazy over what I was able to do with the Russians, right? Like, why won't that happen to me? Doggone them. And here this last month, there are actually four families that are going to make more than $4,000, and one of them up to nine in the Russians.
Wow.
How does that make you feel, Michelle, when you hear that? Frustrated?
Well, yeah, we have no help at our age. I feel like we're doing everything. I feel like we're training. I feel like we're... And then I look at training, and then I think that training that I'm doing on Sunday nights, I could be prospecting and looking for people, but then I know my group needs to be trained. You know, there's only so much time in the day, no matter what we try to do.
Now, one of the things that I don't think is commonly held knowledge about the Russians is that as I got started with those guys, I had a very clear vision of what I was doing. And so it made it much easier for me to do it than others, apparently. And what's Andre and Marina, who are going to get their performance, either performance bonus after this month or next, and I'm sure they'll go over 10,000 if they do what they've been doing here lately, is their first 3 or 4 months, they were just like every other prospect and every other distributor that all of you have, where they... When I would go to them and I would say, I've got a preview going on for people in your group. And they would say, well, obviously, you don't have any idea how hard we work. There's no way we can be representative in that wellness preview in our group. Do either of you have people in your group or someone you've ever signed up that you could imagine would say that?
All of them.
Oh, well... I don't see this working, so obviously I shouldn't put my time in. Well, another piece that I did, I was running around with my tongue hanging out, working underneath the Russians to get underneath the Russians to get underneath the Russians. And it wasn't until their 4th month when they finally got a check, as I was working with their dad, that they said, wow, I guess I better step up and do this. And it wasn't until I said to Marina, I need you to make a CD, that they ever even came to that point. Even though they got a check, it was almost as if they assumed that they were owed that check, and they still weren't going to go to work. So the thing that I saw very clearly that others don't seem to see, and this is just becoming apparent as I'm doing this phone call, is I saw very clearly that what I was going to do was to try to build enough steam under a group of people that they'd either get it or move out of the way. And it's now been 4 groups that I've done that have just pretty much exploded off the map. Well, I don't know. If I look back, it's pretty near everyone I've ever worked with has boiled up from underneath. And as it happens, it dramatically increases the amount of enthusiasm and belief in the part of the person on the top. And it also came to the point where Andre and Marina and Eric, neither one of them, really saw the vision until they saw that to lose their position. If their people went silver underneath them, they would lose them. So if we decided with both of your groups to scare somebody all the way to silver or beyond, can you all see how that would work if we could get somebody underneath to give us somebody underneath to give us somebody underneath? And it would be much easier to convince them if you came back and said, you really got to get this or you're going to lose all these people. How motivating that is? How many teams do you think we have to do to get to that point?
My group?
Yeah, if we were going to say we're going to, you'd have about four teams to find one that would give you enough heat underneath so we could chase it, even if they're going to stand around picking the lint out of their belly button and making excuses for why you don't understand that their life is so miserable, right?
Yep.
Until one day we come to them and say, you better get on the wagon or you're going to lose this whole thing. Then they'd either get it or they'd get out of the way. But about four, I think you're absolutely right. But do you see if we were to take that premise between the two groups, yours and Steve's, would that be a fun adventure to try?
I think so.
Yes.
Well, we just said we're going to try to prove. That's what?
I'm trying to eat dinner. Go ahead.
Okay. So we're going to say we're going to try to prove that by having four groups that we get started to see if we can get one of them that will give us enough stuff so that we can scare them into success, because most of them will never get it. And even if they do get it, many of them won't be scared enough to go into success, but at least we have something to work with from underneath.
Yep.
Steve, do you see that as being much easier leverage than trying to talk them into something nebulous they've never seen before?
Sure.
I think we lost Steve, but...
No, I'm here. I'm here.
And so what I've been operating on that a lot of people don't, and this is a little bit of a, I'm in between a couple of things here, because I've got some people like Jan Davis and Gina Moran who are salespeople, and they're going to, by God, get the sale, and it's going to be a wellness home, or somebody's going to die in the process.
That's the exact words Russell said about, yeah, the other day.
About Jan? And then she wonders, why is that not being reproduced underneath? Because nobody's that mean.
Mm-hmm.
So they're both frustrated because they can't get their teams to reproduce. And I'm doing something that most people, I don't think I've defined it as well as I need to. What I'm doing is I'm setting up something that 4 months from now will pay off. And for a lot of people, they get real frustrated because they don't see that. And I might be also a little bit slow in closing some of them. So that's the error I make, and I should do a little more quickly. And sometimes I'll get a whole group going, and the group will fizzle before we get the chance to really pop it because somebody loses perspective, or I get off track, or I can't find the time to follow up with all the stuff we're working on. But if we were to just say, let's get a group and go to work and see who will let us get underneath, who will let us get underneath who, you both have listened to Jeff Van Vlerikum, right?
Yep.
Do you get the sense that that's what he does?
Yep.
And he does it fairly quickly, right?
Uh-huh.
And his group reproduced that very well. That's why I love Jeff. Is that they get the sense that there's not much here, it just reproduces. I want you to become fully informed, and yet when you're trying to get them fully informed, Michelle, what are they going to do with fully informed once they get there? If they really believe that fully informed meant they were trained to go out and make their fortune, they'd probably do it. The only way we can make them do it is by proving it from underneath. So there, I mean, I guess we kind of come around and we've seen this spot in the forest before. Are we just running around in circles? The point is, we know this will work. You've already said it, right, Michelle? you know it can work.
Yeah, it can work, yes.
And Steve, you wouldn't be at it in the 11th year if you didn't know that it could work, right?
That's right. Jerry?
So if you both, yeah.
I've got a question for you. Maybe I should let you finish out before I ask this question. And, you know, if you're in, with the Russians, did you give them just a, did you teach them to give just enough information to when they met somebody to be able to hand them off to their upline? Or did you teach them how to do the whole thing?
Good question. I gave them enough information to have them get people to the event, and they did something magical. They would bring people to the event. I would present to a certain point, and then they would turn around and say, you guys, they would do it in Russian. I wouldn't even know they were doing it. They were saying, this is for us to make a living. All of us can make a huge living doing this. We're having trouble with our building jobs. We all made money before. This is a way for us to make money, and the only way we can do it is to have our tools. And if you get these kits, here's how the compensation plan works, and they described the compensation plan and made it finish. And that's the magic that the Russians had, was to say, obviously you can't do it with nothing. So they were closing. I was opening everybody, and they were closing them. They were just coming right back around and saying, you just need to, someone would say, well, this all sounds good. What am I supposed to do? And they would say, you need to get these kits. Because once you buy a kit, then you can put it on other people. They already figured out that they needed the stuff. You want to feel better. You want to be able to represent what you're doing. You want it all to work. So I guess, I don't know if that answers your question.
Well, yeah, and as they prospected, though, and the reason I'm asking this question is because of, you know, listening to the information with Don Fela.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from the standpoint that he's teaching you to do something so simply, you know, hand them a card, let them read the card, ask them a couple questions, talk to them. If they, you know, hand them the card, they read it themselves. They ask, well, what's next? You give them a book. Tell them, instead of reading the whole book, you tell them to read four chapters. Well, most of the time, most people will sit down and say, heck with four chapters. This is interesting. I'm going to read the whole thing. So they read the whole thing. And then they know what's going on. And what they say, you know, they can't have the objection, well, it takes too much time, because it didn't take any time. It took 30, 45 seconds to have them read the card, gave them a little bit of information, let them train themselves. And away they go. And that's what I think.
Okay, well, here's the key secret. What's in those 45 seconds? Is it something that would be perceived by the end user as being useful?
Sure. I think so.
It absolutely has to be. And in their hands. Yeah, so here's the question. If Don Fela can sponsor enough people to make 1 million people in his downline in 2 years. He didn't do them all himself.
That's right.
But they were all done quickly.
That's right.
There was something in his recruiting message that got the point across, that you're not getting out of the tools you use. Wouldn't you agree, Steve?
Totally. You know, I think.
So what's different about Don Fela's tool and his offering than your tool and your offering?
The simplicity of the tool and the question he answers, you know, or questions he asks and then answers with the small tool. You know, the first one here, have you ever thought what it'd be like to own your own life? You know, everybody wants to own their own life. That's why you got into your own business, right?
Michelle, would you agree with that?
I only heard part of it, so about owning your own life.
Okay, have you ever thought what it'd be like to own your own life? Okay, and so the reason you got into your business was because you could own your own life, right?
Correct.
You didn't realize the business would own you when you got to the business.
To a point.
Okay, and so then he goes with the rest of it. It says, this is what I think it means to own your own life. When you subtract out the sleeping time, commuting time, working time, and times for things you have to do each and every day of your life, most people don't have more than 1 or 2 hours each day to do what they would like to do. And then, would they have the money to do it? We have discovered a way for you to learn how to own your life by building a home-based business, and we have a system for doing it that's so simple anyone can do it. Doesn't require selling, and the best part, it won't take much of your time. For more information on how to own your own life, contact. And that's the crux of the card. And then on the back it says earning a residual income is like earning interest on money in the bank. You get paid whether or not you go out of bed in the morning. Monthly income at 5%. And what he's teaching people with this is the fact that if you want a $200 a month income at 5% interest, you've got to have $48,000 in the bank. Well, with the way that Jerry's teaching people how to do this, how long does it take him to get the same as $48,000 in the bank? Not very long, right, Jerry?
Yep.
And then it goes up to $10,000. You know, this little card has up to $10,000 a month, which is the same as $2.4 million. Just earning the residual income of $200 a month means you've saved $48,000. Many people achieve this within their first 2 or 3 months in our business. And people can leave.
You're fading away again.
Sorry.
What do you have in your offering to people that says those things?
In what I've been using? Nothing.
What tools? So what do the tools say to people that you're giving them?
I think what I've been giving out for a long time has been the fact that you have to build your own website, you have to do this, you have to do that, and nobody wants to do that. I think probably the best thing that ever happened was my son having his life crash and the fact that he didn't pay his DSL bill, so my server got shut off and I couldn't use my server. And when I changed the name, it didn't used to be steve.crowfoot.org to go to. Now it's canbeforyou.biz, and I can hide behind that, and nobody needs to know that I put the thing together. And I think that's been a great boon for me, because I can send them to a particular site, and they have no idea I built it, so therefore they can go to that site and use it, just like you can Pathfinders or the network. And the only reason I built this was because NECAN didn't have anything 5 years ago. Now they've got great things, but still it's so confusing to send somebody there that it's still not a hugely useful tool until they're in the business. When they're in the business, that's great.
Okay, well, go through your first line again off your card.
Okay.
You want to own your own life, right?
Right, uh-huh.
What materials do you give people that say, do you want to own your life? What part of your wellness preview says, do you want to own your own life?
The wellness previews that I go to are the Pathfinder canned ones, and it doesn't say that.
Do you think it's important to say that?
I think so.
Do you think it's more important to almost guarantee that?
Yeah, I do.
Michelle, would you like to own your own life?
Sure.
And what does it mean to you to own your own life?
Of my business to do this business.
So do you think the second thing it says on that card is posted anywhere in the tools you use, Steve?
No.
And the second thing on the card is saying these are the things that I believe make you own your own life, right?
Right.
So read those so that everybody can hear them.
Okay, when you subtract out the sleeping time, commuting time, working time, and time for things you have to do each and every day of your life, most people don't have more than 1 to 2 hours each day to do what they would like to do. And then, would they have the money to do it?
Would you agree with that, Michelle?
Yep.
Do you think those are more important things in life than somebody taking care of their bunion or their back problem?
Well, we use a lot of those about owning your own life when we're talking about our stuff.
Okay, so then maybe since Steve is not using that verbiage or using tools that make that statement or implying a belief system that you can gain all of that, maybe that's why your prospecting is easy and Steve's is difficult.
Well, like, mine and Russell's main key is, are you financially, we'd like to be financially free. That's one of the things we hit people up with every day. Can you see
Remember, Michelle,
did you get a chance to hear, the older lady that was here at Spokane? Did you come up for that last rhythm of the expo?
Yes.
What was her name? She looked like Cruella de Vil with short hair.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. I didn't hear all of it, no, but I heard some of it. I was out of the room checking out.
Okay.
I did hear parts of it.
Did you get a sense that she believed that she could help somebody make money?
Of course.
And the same thing with all of the platinums and diamonds that got up there. There was just this sense of belief that they could make, they could take this thing and they could teach you how to drive it. But she, more than anybody, how much does a prospect want to know that you could teach them how to drive it?
Lots. So you have to be confident in yourself to be able to do it, for them to want to join you. If you're not, they won't join you.
If we were to use simply that section that talks about, well, do you think that even though it takes too long to get to the level 4 meeting, do you like the structure of the level 4 meeting?
Talking to me?
Yeah.
I like the structure of the level 4, yes.
Can you see in the level 4 where we're actually getting down to what you would have to do on a daily basis to get what you want in return?
Some days with some people I feel it's kind of like Dan, where you're too much too soon. I don't know. I understand the process and I understand where it's trying to go, but sometimes I feel some people aren't quite ready to ask those kind of questions. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, I agree. But what if they're, do you guys, in the times you've been doing them, do you feel like maybe you were too premature when you asked them what would your perfect day be like? Because it all hinges on that question. They maybe don't know you well enough. They might feel self-conscious in answering. What do you think?
A little bit of both. If they're not ready, maybe. Some people aren't business-oriented. Some people have no clue what they want for their life. Some people live day-to-day. They haven't even ever thought about a question like that.
Most people have been beat up so badly.
I find that to be the case, too, when I go through some of these. Some people just, and in fact, when I was doing that one over the internet with Mike and Leo,
yeah.
Leo couldn't answer any of those questions.
Right.
And if Leo couldn't answer any of those questions, there's 0% chance that Leo is going to go to the next person in line and be able to get that person to believe that this was any different than anything else out there, and they wouldn't even listen to him. So you'd almost have to release Leo before you ever got him started. The only option we have with Leo is to almost skip everything else because he couldn't come up with anything and say, can you watch to see if this works? And then I just bounce right to, here's what we need to do. We need to sit down. Your job will be to invite somebody and listen 6 times. So we just skip all the rest of the stuff in between and say, I don't think that you're at a point where you can believe in the sequence enough, so what I'd like to have you do is to invite 6 people and then listen 6 times. What am I looking for if I do that?
Looking for him to be able to step up and learn the sequence.
I've already actually, I think you're right, because that's giving him the benefit of the doubt. But what I'm looking for is, can he lead me to somebody who does have a pulse right now? Because he doesn't.
Yeah.
And if I can get somebody who does have a pulse, I can leave him alone completely, and I don't waste any emotional time or energy on him. And that's one of the things you guys don't have anything, any of, is extra time. But if, so it basically goes back to Dave Johnson rule number 1, if they bring you people, you can work with them. If they don't, it doesn't matter what you do. It's all exercise. How many people?
Go ahead.
What's that? How many people at Tootie brought you?
Well, that's what I kind of feel about the Sunday group they were going to out at Mike's house every Sunday. Is right now I kind of feel it's a waste of time because all of those people, none of them are bringing anybody. It's, you know, this was supposed to grow and we bring in people as, you know, we signed up people and brought them in, and it's not working. They're not catching on to do that. You know, they're catching on and learning how to talk to people and stuff, but they're not following through to finish it up.
Good point. Now, here's an interesting thought. Have you ever heard of the term back-end marketing?
No.
Back-end marketing would be somebody starting up a swim team because they have a swimsuit supply company. They know that there's going to be a real social group, that the kids get a lot of benefit, the parents love coming together. You're doing it for free.
I get it. It's a social thing. Yes, I know that.
So on the back end, you sell swimsuits.
Yep.
So if your Sunday event becomes a back end market, you make that a really fun event where they learn lots of good information for free that they'll hopefully they will bring other people to the event because they can come for free. And through it, they're leading you to people.
That's what we've been trying to do, but that's an already in thing, so they're not bringing people to that, but they're supposed to be bringing people to the wellness preview, and they're not following through.
Which means they have to talk to more people to be able to...
I'm not talking to any people.
Yeah.
Yeah, so my mom is up in a little town in North Idaho, and she moved there, didn't know anybody, and now she's immensely involved in the Grange and the church. Why? Well, it's lonely.
Social. And why are people not afraid to go and get involved in those things, but they're afraid to get involved in this?
Because they've been conditioned. They've been conditioned to believe that if they make money off of something, then they're bad.
Yeah. No, I totally believe that one. Yeah. That's Alejandra. And that's Sylvia. Well, I can't charge somebody for something.
Mm-hmm.
They just want to give. They don't see the picture that if they give to more people, that it helps more people than just that one person.
Yeah, so I think here's the creative thing that you might want to really kind of think about in the next couple of days, and that is, what can you offer in a social atmosphere that would bring people? Can you imagine that your mother could probably put together a very large group of people to play bunco on Thursdays? Or something that they like.
Okay, so where are you going? Just to have people, to bring people in, you mean? To have people to talk to, or are you lost me?
Yeah, she could have a bunch of people that could get together for social purposes, and they would spend untold amounts of money to get dolled up or bring their crafts or do something that had a social return on it, right?
Yep.
What the creativity in all of this would be is, as back-end marketing would be, let's say you got a group of people that got together for weight loss, and their big deal was to support one another, and they were going to hoot and holler and have a great time with that. They were going to measure once a week, and they might have a little bit of a talk on some things that help with weight loss. And then you seed the thing. Here's some things that make sense. On the back table, we have some stuff that really seems to work pretty well for people, and somebody starts to use that, and they start to get intrigued by the shoe inserts, or the weighted shoes. It's a back-end marketing proposition, just to get bodies. And in that back-end marketing, it sounds like many of these people would really love to be in the back-end social structure. And out of all those people who continue to buy, and it's a place for you to ask people when you're interviewing them is to say, we have this incredibly fun, really very inexpensive social structure that you can be involved with, and you get to know people, they like to hear your stories, and you're having a blast with it, and you're doing all the things. All those people would find it easy to bring their friend to that. And from that, you'll find some who kind of get, I'd like to really ramp this up. This could make some sense. I'd like to be a leader of one of those. And I've often tried to imagine what you could do with women, particularly retired, maybe some of them divorced, that have a tremendous amount to offer. They all have some income of some sort. They spend lots of money on stupid doodads. But how do you corral them all? What events, what kind of wonderful little things could you do? Maybe they could come together and they write poetry, or they tell stories to each other, or they do crafty things, or they do something like that. And then there's just a 5 or 10 minute segment. Maybe you pass out some websites, and maybe you have a newsletter, that kind of stuff. And out of those people, you're going to find a few that will grow. You still love them. They still have a blast. In fact, it's even fun for you to do. But it's a place where you're going to farm the deal, and some will pop up and be real useful people, and others just don't. Do those seeds help any, Michelle?
our problem's finding the people. I just don't see that that's our issue.
Well, I think it's...
But, yeah, I mean, for other people in our group, that may be something that would fit in, you know, like with my mother, like you say, but... Or maybe, you know, Nancy or...
How many people are lonely?
Lots of people.
And bored.
People that are busy are lonely.
Yeah, they're lonely or they're bored. And even if they're busy, it's just out of duty. It's not because they like doing what they're doing. And so if our wellness previews were things that were places where people clapped and enjoyed who they were and looked forward to seeing them come and wanted to hear their opinion and do all that, they'd be there every week.
But how do we put that into what we're doing on Sunday and starting by adding new people but still let it be a training? To me, we've been talking about speaking, you know, public speaking. We've been talking about, you know, we've been reading a book every month, you know. We've been talking about how to prospect, how to follow up, you know.
Those are very important things.
How could we ingrain new people into that without them being introduced to anything up front?
Have you ever been to a Toastmasters group? Did you get the sense that the people there kind of enjoyed what they were doing?
No. Most of them were there to learn how to speak, and they didn't enjoy it, no.
Oh, man, the one I was in, they just had a ball with it. And what they did was they had little timers, and you had, you have to make up a story, and then you have to tell a story, or you can do a speech on some subject, and then you can go home and study how to do one on another subject, and you get little ribbons for one level or the other, and you try to get through a number of different styles of speaking. But there was a logical sequence that they were walking through, so they felt almost as if they graduated. You've seen people go through school, and they'll do all kinds of stuff. They'll pay to have people put them through school so that at the end they could be called certified. Think about that kind of thing in certified. They will go through first aid training to be certified, even if they're never going to use it.
If we made that a certification class, is that what you're saying?
I mean, that might be something, because people want to be recognized. They want to get to graduation. They want to see, have some people cheer them on when they accomplish those things.
I've been thinking about this quite seriously, because it's really annoying me that there's no new people there. You know, it's kind of like a waste. But then again, I know it's not a waste, but it's a big danger because there's not new people there.
Yeah, I can see definitely how that would be. And so what you need to do, and this is what Terry Latham has always done, is basically he goes out and finds the people who will bring somebody and then brings them back and introduces them to the group. Never accentuating the people who don't. He goes out and finds the people who will. Now, there are many of them that don't, but he just keeps going after the ones who will. So it's just some thoughts to throw around out there.
I guess my question is, how do I integrate those people in becoming? Just let them come? Just invite people to come? Or put them through a one-step process first? Or put them just through...
Hey, Jerry?
Yeah.
Remember back to your dinner party days?
Mm-hmm.
People had... If they wanted to come, they had to bring a guest.
That's exactly right.
What kind of meeting?
We had a dinner party deal.
Oh.
And in order for them to come... They couldn't be involved in that event unless they brought somebody.
Well, that's a good idea.
And they also had to bring a dish.
Yeah. So how did you word that?
Pretty properly.
Yeah,
the point was really that we were building very quickly with a few very dedicated people. Our purpose was to bring excited people together. We were going to have a potluck, we were going to have a wellness preview, and we were going to give rollouts, and we were going to teach people how to make money at the end. And if you wanted to be a part of that, you had to bring somebody. And pretty soon, that secret event, people were dying to see what was going on. And it grew like mad. It was designed so that if you brought somebody on Tuesday, we were running, I think, three of them a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday or something. If you brought somebody on Monday, then they would have enough information to bring somebody back on Wednesday. And that was really the premise.
Yeah.
And it exploded. Yeah. and it exploded like crazy. We ran out of presenters. We ran out of places to do it. We developed one platinum, two golds, and something like 17 silvers in a three-month period doing it. And we quit for three reasons. One, we ran out of presenters, and we didn't have a follow-up plan for training those people to move on farther. Two, we got to summertime, and people stopped going to these evening events. And three, imagine having three potlucks a week. We were all getting so fat we could hardly fit through the door.
That's why you just sell at night.
Yeah. And we did have some people that were complaining that it was hard to get home and prepare some dish to come to some deal after work, that was just too much for them. But it didn't seem like it was too much for them when we were smoking. I mean, holy crap. And it was fun because we would get there, they would have the fun and fellowship of a meal. During the time when they were sitting there, our purpose was, let's get to know who you are, where you live, where your kids are, what kind of things you have, if there's anything hurt, they would open up. Then when we get to the wellness preview, we'd know what to put on them. The wellness preview was very short, actually. It was just an overview of Nican, and we'd put stuff on people before we got started, and we'd ask them at the end, did you have an effect with that? And then we'd say, now, during the little snack and dessert section, we'd like to have you go in and get your rollout experience. We had a whole bunch of rollout bags and said, and that's the end of the formal presentation for those who wanted to just come and see the products and so forth. At 20 till, we're going to start talking about the compensation system and how we make money. And we have these little packets set around the table that would have a compensation plan in them. They'd have a little Nican at a glance showing the products and then a little deal on if you wanted to start, here's what you would do. You just enroll, and then you go find some people and you bring them back here. We'd say, if you do this many plus this many plus this many, you can make this much money. But just before we started that segment, we'd say, now some of you just came and we know you've got to get home for the babysitters and you had only allocated this much time. So if that's true for you, why don't you sneak on out after your rollout, and that'll be perfect. And we'll just leave this table right in the way of where they had to walk to get out. To do our little presentation on how much we were going to make, and almost nobody left. But if you never gave them permission to leave, they were all scrambling to try to get out. It was psychologically, the thing was powerful. So I guess incorporated in there was something where everybody felt like, in our most powerful meetings was when you just go around, there was a bunch of new prospects, at least one for every person, and then you go around the room and you would ask somebody, tell one of your most meaningful Nican experiences. You'd have five or six of those, and that was pretty much the whole meeting. Because they're excited to tell their story if there's prospects. But they're not excited to tell their story if there's no prospects. You ever seen that happen?
Yep.
Well, if there's an out-of-town presenter, they love to tell their story because that person hasn't heard their story yet. That's a good point, Steve. Way to go.
Yeah, I'll talk about that one some more. I might have to try that here.
Yeah, you just might.
It just popped into my head. You know, if you're not getting anybody to bring a guest, well, then the only way you can come is to bring a guest. And what was it? They could come once without a guest, and then they had to do it?
Right, so they could kind of get a feel for what was going on.
Michelle, what's your last name?
Ferguson.
Okay. So I've got your information then. What's Palmer's first name?
Marion.
Marion.
M-A-R-I-O-N? That's a boy's spelling. It's A-N.
A-N, okay. Well, see, that came perfectly because my dad was a Marion, so, anyway.
Uh-huh.
For a middle name.
Guys, I got to go do my emails now, but
okay.
Hopefully that's been some seed for thought and can move you forward a little bit.
Yeah, thank you so much.
All right, guys.
Appreciate you.
Good night.
Have a good one. Bye now.